From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com. You're listening to the Brian and Vinny Show with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny V.
Brian and Vinny, along with Granny and Craig and sometimes other people. They're paid by a con, and they'll say,
everybody, it's the Brian and Vinny Show. It is February 26, 2026, figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot to talk about here today. And it's a free show. Yeah, I just decided. Show's going out free for everybody today, so enjoy it. And if you like it, sign up for more, because we got a lot of big things coming up this WrestleMania season here. We've got AW Revolution coming up. We got Elimination Chamber this weekend. We got WrestleMania. All the news that is fit to talk about on a podcast, you can get for the low, low price of whatever you want to pay. Main site, got all sorts of stuff on main site, WrestlingObserver.com. We got podcasts dating back to 2005. I can't even remember the number now. It's like 18,000 shows or something crazy. And we've got all the observers dating back to like 1988, I actually think. Might be a few missing, but in general, they're all there. You can follow the entire history of wrestling since before most of you were born through the Observer. And there's a new Observer every week. I do shows every single day, usually two, sometimes three. And you should not miss out. If you like this show, sign up. Main site, WrestlingObserver.com. You get everything. And if you only want the podcast, we have three options, all of which are only $9.99. We have the YouTube page, f4wonline.com/YouTube. You can watch all of the shows and watch them live at f4wonline.com/YouTube. Brian and Vinny Show airs at 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. And Observer Radio, God only knows when. Observer Live is noon every day, Pacific, 3 Eastern. But you can watch them live and on replay at f4wonline.com/YouTube. Spotify also has audio and video at f4wonline.com/Spotify. And I don't know if I'm announcing this or not, but Apple Podcasts has always been audio only. But apparently Apple Podcasts is debuting video in March. So I think starting next month, you'll be able to get the video through Apple Podcasts as well. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, all $9.99 a month. Just put any of these after F4W Online, f4wonline.com/YouTube, f4wonline.com/Apple, f4wonline.com/Spotify, or do the whole shebang at WrestlingObserver.com. And enjoy the ride, everybody. It's a lot of fun. Right, everybody in the chat? They're all agreeing right now. All right.
Good deal.
Every Thursday, we talk NXT and Dynamite, and that's what we're going to do tonight. And we don't have to worry about swearing on this podcast, unlike Observer Live. So let's get fucking going, brother.
Word. We watch AW Dynamite, February 18th. No, that's right. February 25th, 2026.
We make lots of mistakes as well.
That's true. We're human beings.
I was going to say you were an idiot, but
We're idiotic human beings. We air from time to time. Mm. Live from the Mission Ballroom in Denver, Colorado. So they're running down the card. One of the matches on tonight's show is the Babes of Wrath versus Megabad. Now, the last time we saw these teams was just last weekend, or I guess 2 weekends ago in Australia, where the Babes of Wrath beat them clean, but then were attacked by their new friend, Lena Cross, I believe. And so they're doing a rematch here, even though the Babes of Wrath just beat them, which is kind of stupid.
Well, maybe the Babes of Wrath were going to lose and everything went wrong. I actually still don't know who was supposed to win that match.
In Australia?
No, I'm talking about the match on the show tonight.
I'm talking about the match in Australia.
I'm talking about the one here.
Well, we haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, I know, but okay. I'm just bringing it
up. The match in Australia, the Babes of Wrath won clean, and they're just doing a rematch for no reason.
Yes.
But the champs are fine with it, so I guess I just shouldn't complain.
Well, my point is, maybe it was going to be a title change tonight on this Dynamite. But because Julia Hart got hurt, they changed the finish?
That's entirely possible. But my question is, what in the hell did Mega Bad do to get a rematch other than beat them up again?
They beat
Why did that
up
match
again.
Even happen?
They beat him up again.
They couldn't give him a big win between now and then?
See, this doesn't bother me because I didn't watch either of these shows. I was on a cruise. And I got to give AEW a little credit here. You know, I was fully expecting to not have any idea what was going on. Because if there's one thing that AEW is not great at, it's recapping what has happened. They expect you to just pay attention. And if not, too bad. Well, I went back to watching all the shows this week. And to my astonishment, of the three shows I have watched since returning, the best show when it comes to recapping what happened when I was gone was Dynamite. They did a better job than NXT, and they did a better job, a much better job, than Monday Night Raw. Raw didn't open with one single recap. I have no idea what's going on in WWE. They didn't recap who won chamber qualifiers. They didn't recap big angles from the week before, who beat up who. The return of J.D. McDonough's big head, whatever happened with Dom, and I have no idea. They're all just discussing things. But this opened with a recap, and everything that was important on the show, they recapped. So I have to thank Tony Khan for all of the recaps this week. He done good, which is unusual.
They did a lot of recaps, and they did a video package, which I guess is kind of a recap. This whole FTR Young Bucks thing. So I didn't watch last week's Collision. I watched the one before. So I missed when FTR attacked the Jackson family, pile-drived a civilian.
I didn't watch the show and I saw this. I watched it on YouTube or something when I got back, and it was an awesome. The only thing wrong with the angle was they had a mistimed powder spot.
Mm.
The Young Bucks dad, I think he was going to try and spit or something on Stokely, but he starts to do it right as Stokely throws the powder. So the powder's like in the air. And then he spits, and then he sells it. So that was very mistimed. Mm. But other than that, it was great. The Young Bucks mom, like, she got shoved, and she took a fucking bump. And then they pulled old Malachi, the brother of the Young Bucks. I think he's the youngest brother. And they yanked him out of the ring, and they threw him inside, and they gave him a stuffed pile driver. This guy, he used to be a worker. He took an awesome bump for this. And I don't know if they're going to do an angle, and he's going to do a match or what, but... Man, this was a great, great angle that they did here.
And had a great video package recapping and following up with comments from FTR and Young Bucks after the fact. Saying it's all personal now. Now you're going to fight. Jon Moxley versus El Clone. I like Renee interviewing Marina. These are not her exact words, but she did basically say, why are you slapping my husband? Marina says something about how it's not about joy or whatever. They had a super fun match. Clone runs wild with a spiffy lucha. So Mox makes it ugly. He's manhandling Clone outside. He's chopping the piss out of him inside. We get a 10 minutes gone by notice as Mox hits a pile driver, and the crowd seemed to believe it may have been the finish. When was the last time Jon Moxley won a match with a pile driver? Or anyone, as we'll get to later in the show. So they do some stuff. Clone is so great, not just at doing cool shit, but doing it with lots of attitude. The dismissive way he kicked the ropes into Moxley's throat, or the pose he does when he does a kip up. He's awesome. 5 minutes left as Clone gets a moonsault foot stomp for two, and he stuck the landing as the announcer's note, but it's to no avail. Mox gets a paradigm shift out of nowhere and follows with an absolute neck-cracking Death Rider for the win.
Yeah, he sure did. That he dropped this guy in his noggin.
Fatal.
On his cabeza.
Assuming he is okay, was your usual very good Dynamite opener, but hey, that looks scary.
There was only one injury on the show that I know of.
Okay. A recap, Brian.
Yeah.
Of Swerve beating Kenny Omega last week and then destroying him after the match. Then Nana comes out of the announce desk, says Swerve doesn't care about $100,000, so I guess that was the fine levied against him. Swerve doesn't care about a week off, you stupid fools! And Swerve comes out, I guess unpaid, to stand on the announce desk. notes that this has been reinforced since he dropped Kenny across it. He feels no guilt about what he did to Kenny after Kenny said somebody else was the most dangerous man in AEW. He points out he's taken out all the Elite one by one and thinks back to last year when Hangman Page asked him if he regretted all the horrible things he had done, and he said yes. But looking back at it, all those horrible things he did made him the most successful he's ever been in his career. So he's going forward now with no regrets, and everyone on the AEW roster is on notice.
This guy's going to have an uphill climb. These people do not want to boo Swerve.
I see, yeah.
He's too cool, and they love to chant, "Whose house?" And he was trying so hard to get booed. And, I mean, the only thing that he could even do to get booed was mention that he killed Kenny, and he got some boos for that. But like everything else, it was like, they want to cheer this guy. They like him.
I'm not sure, with the obvious exception of Don Callis, anyone in AEW is going to get booed.
Oh, there are people that get booed.
Not like
Gabe
that.
Kidd.
Yeah, there are dueling chants for him in Orange.
Not really.
Brody King rebuts Swerve's promo, vows to beat Mark Davis tonight and show why he, not Swerve, should be next in line for a title shot. And then it is Orange Cassidy versus Gabe Kidd. What intense violence this was. They just went at each other. And by they, I mean by Gabe, and by each other, I mean Orange. Gabe destroyed him frenetically, relentlessly, for a long time. Orange finally hit a Stun Dog Millionaire and a tope and a diving DDT. They traded big moves for a while, and they both collapsed to a big ovation. Orange is doing his shtick, so Gabe spits on him, but Orange hits the beach break for two, and man, these fans are just rabid for everything tonight. Kid pulls the ref in the way, gouges the eyes, hits a pile driver, and gets the win. I guess it's pile driver tonight in Denver. Pile driver night in Denver. But Gabe Kidd won. It was another very good match.
I thought the match was all right. There was, I don't know. There was something about it. I mean, there's just so many great matches in AEW that
yes.
An average match seems way below average. And this was, I guess, above average. But I did hate the finish because they did the old spot where, you know, the ref gets caught between both guys so the heel can gouge the eyes. That's all fine and good if you gouge the eyes and then you stop and the ref turns around and doesn't see it. But this Gabe Kidd, he just gouged. He gouged and he gouged and he gouged and he gouged. And he gouged for so long that the ref turned around and started yelling at him for gouging the eyes. And at that point, it's like, well, why did you distract the ref then? He's going to catch you. I don't want to see, like, if I don't like referee interference and outside interference and distraction because we see it too much. So if you're going to do it, it at least needs to be done for a reason and play into the finish. If you're doing it and the ref catches you anyway, then you did it just for the sake of doing it, and we do it too much. So I didn't like that. But other than that, I thought it was a good match.
So afterwards, Gabe and Clark Connors attack Orange until Darby makes the save, and they hit a bunch of big moves and send the heels packing, so this feud must continue.
Hey, the notable thing is Darby didn't get his ass kicked for once. He actually cleared the ring.
That's true.
He used his skateboard. He sent everybody packing. You know, normally he would make the save and then they would kill him and, you know, bury him in the desert or light him on fire or throw him off a cliff. But he stood tall, which I have been advocating he needs to do more of. So I was happy with this.
Renee interviews Chris Statlander and Thunder Rosa. Next week in El Paso, Thunder's challenging for a title. Apparently Tekla. She's ranting and raving about this champion she wants to fight and, like, She probably said her name at the very beginning, but I blinked and missed it. So it's also Statlander and Thunder as a team against the Sisters of Sin on Collision this Saturday. Statlander is very concerned about Thunder Rosa. I guess she thinks Thunder's taking Tekla too lightly. And when Renee wants to know, why are you so concerned about Thunder about taking this match? And Stat just shakes her head and walks away in silence. We had a standby match.
Hate these.
The concept of a standby match is when everything else has gone short, then a standby match is thrown on at the end. When you do a standby match in the middle of the show and then your show still goes long, that's stupid.
See, I didn't get mad at the guy, but I had to.
He tagged me too.
No, different guy. Right. I had to chastise Jason on the chat because he was trying to defend WWE when they didn't do recaps, and I cannot tolerate defense of the indefensible. And the guy on Twitter that was defending standby matches, I can't allow defenses of the indefensible, okay? You made a point, but you didn't even make the actual legitimate, the more the real point, okay? In the old days, a wrestling show ended when the show was over. Okay? My point is there's no overrun. If the show was scheduled to go from 8 to 9, it was over at 9. There was no such thing as an overrun, okay? They wanted to convince you that it was real, or at the very least, they wanted you to be able to believe it was a sporting event. And so the promoters didn't want every match, every main event, to end right on time at the top of the hour. That would be fake. So, because they couldn't have an overrun, what they would do is sometimes the main event would air and it would end 4 minutes before the top of the hour, or 8 minutes before the top of the hour, or 12 minutes before the top of the hour. Well, since the main event was over and they had 12 minutes left, they'd throw in a standby match. Here's a standby match. And, you know, it probably the show would go off the air in the middle of the standby match, but who cares? It's a standby match. It was a standby match to fill time at the end, okay? Well, now we live in a world where the show doesn't ever end on time. When is the last time a live Dynamite show ended on time?
Has it ever happened?
If it has, it's been like 4 years. Yeah. So, first off, the idea of putting a standby match in the middle of the show doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. If the show ever ended on time, that'd be one thing. The guy on Twitter was like, well, maybe the promoter wants to make sure his main event goes on last. Just like, what the fuck difference does it make when it goes on? Many shows in history have started with the main event. It doesn't matter. But the show always runs long, so putting on a standby match in the middle of the show is even more stupid. So standby matches are dumb. And it astounds me that Tony Khan, of all people, who used to love this old school territorial wrestling, doesn't understand what a standby match is. Or if he does, he just doesn't give a shit and does it to troll me. But I hate these standby matches. They're stupid. And you know, another guy was like, well, you know, having a standby match explains why wrestlers walk around with their gear on backstage, even if they're not booked. I'm like, does this really need to be explained? And you know what? If it does need to be explained, I got an explanation for you. None of them know if they're working the show or not. None of them know if they're working Ring of Honor after the show is over. They're just standing around in case they're booked at the last minute. You want to know why that's a good storyline? Because that's reality. There have been many wrestlers who have walked around backstage in their gear at Dynamite because they're actually not sure if they're going to be on the show or if they're going to be on Ring of Honor. So you may as well just say that. But anyway, I hate standby matches.
Well, the standby match in question is...
And it was pointless anyway!
Kind of. It was an excuse to get Kevin Knight out there to cut a promo. It's Kevin Knight and Mansoor. They look great for the, like, the 3 minutes they had. Mansoor is a hell of an athlete and also a tremendous geek. Outstanding geek. But Knight takes over, has the UFO splash to the wind, basically a squash. And I was trying to figure out what the end game here was. What was he going to turn on Hangman? And then he cuts a promo, saying he knows Hangman's going to wipe the floor with MJF and wants to be Hangman's first challenger. So I guess maybe he's going to turn on Hangman. Okay. Speaking of whom, Shivani brings out Hangman and MJF. They're going to pick the stipulation for the World Championship match Revolution. Max reminds us Hangman would be the second wrestler whose AEW career he ended with this stip, referencing, of course, Cody Rhodes. We have some fun with the crowd chanting weed, weed, weed. They explain the stips. Hangman's choice is Texas Death. Max's match is one-way no DQ, which means Hangman can be DQ'd, but he can't. So he can do whatever he wants. Hangman agrees to these stips. Spends some time threatening MJF with all the things he can do in Texas Death. He got two shits in there. He did, in fact, give two shits. So he tells Max to go ahead and flip the coin. The coin comes up heads. Max gets his stipulation. He is very happy. He goes to leave, but Hangman demands to see the quarter. MJF refuses. Jet speed block his path out one door. Brodito block the other door. They throw him back in the ring. They get their hands on this quarter. Turns out it was rigged. It was a double-headed coin. Hangman knows a coward like Max never would have left this to chance. And because Max tried to screw everyone here, really, by getting his stip picked, Tony Khan, through Tony Schiavone, announces that Texas Death is officially the stipulation.
I thought this segment was great. Everyone keeps mentioning that that Kevin Knight spoiled it in the promo earlier, and I have not gone back. Maybe he did. But I'm pretty sure what Kevin Knight actually said was, they're going to choose a stipulation later, and we all know Hangman is going to win, and he's going to wipe the floor with Max. I don't think he actually spoiled it. I think as a babyface, he just presumed his friend was going to win. But anyway.
Or win the match, is what I thought.
I like that. I actually like this segment a lot.
Yeah.
Because there's so much in wrestling where the babyface has to look stupid. And this was a heel, MJF, who came up with a diabolical plan. I'm going to get a double-sided coin, and I'm going to fool this idiot. And you could see, as soon as he mentioned the coin, there was a pause, and then, you know, the eyebrow raised on Hangman. He knew exactly what this idiot was going to do, and he encouraged him to do it. And then he acted all sad, and MJF got even more cocky after he won. And then as he's leaving, he brings up, can I see that quarter? And, of course, the heel tries to bail, and then all the baby faces come out and force him to hand over the quarter. It turns out it's fake. And then, just like we saw in Lucha 20 years ago, guy got punished for lying. You cannot lie! Tony Khan caught him, and as a result, they didn't do another coin flip with a real coin. MJF just was punished by letting Hangman have the stipulation. So I thought it was a great little segment. Made the baby face look smart.
Yes.
Made the heel look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that, you know, Hangman's putting the ability to ever challenge for the title again on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And he won the coin flip. So I think they want you to think that he's losing. But I don't think he's losing.
Apparently, yeah, it would be. I mean, it's kind of all insane. Unless MJF's going to go film another movie. But it does seem way too early for MJF to lose. It seems really, really stupid to have Hangman lose with a stip. I thought it was interesting when he first announced it. His exact words were, if he does not win the match, he will never challenge again. I thought they'd do some screwy DQ finish or something. But no, it's Texas Death. You can't do a screwy DQ finish then.
No, you cannot.
So we'll see. The segment was great. And everyone was fantastic in their role.
And the fans chanted, you fucked up at MJF at the end, which was a great crown on top of the cake. Anyway.
Your cake sucks. Recap of the Brawling Birds debuting on whatever show that was, winning the heart attack. They claimed he beat the piss out of two girls. It was easy peasy, lemon squeezy. That's not what I saw. I saw the two of them bonking into each other and somebody named Becca running wild on them for a little bit before they overcame and won with that move. They cursed a lot and decided to go for a pint. Mega Bad versus the Babes of Wrath. They may well have been a title change planned here. But what happened was, early on, the Babes are dominating until the heels are cutting them off and doing cool moves, making a comeback.
I, by the way, hate the Brawling Birds name.
Oh, it's awful.
I like the team.
Sure.
I think they're a great team. I think they're very charismatic. But that is one horrible team name. Horrible. I would prefer, what did I come up
with? Winds of Hate.
Wind Hate? Hate Wind?
Sure, any of these.
Hate Wind? Yeah. Winds of Hate, that's not bad. Yeah. But yeah, Brawling Bird sucks.
So Megan is a tope. It's a really, really cool move. Penelope does a moonsault from the top rope to the floor. It's a really, really cool move. Everyone's cheering for the heels here. And unfortunately, the landing for Penelope on that moonsault was not good. And it happened right before break. And she's not showing obvious signs of distress. But we come back. She's nowhere to be seen.
Well, it was very weird because she does the moonsault. And it's the old moonsault where you do a backflip and land on your feet and everybody just falls down. And, you know, that's impossible to catch. The only way to catch a moonsault is you have to lay out and be falling horizontally and then everyone kind of catches you like this. When you do the moonsault to land on your feet, it's like you can't catch it. You just have feet flying at your face. And so everybody kind of stands and then they land in the, like Charlotte does it, everybody does it. So she goes to do that one. And
Alani.
Hangman, everybody. I mean, ultimately, unless they stop doing it, as God is my witness, every single one of them is going to get hurt someday. Your body is not designed.
Your leg's not designed to land like this.
To jump off a post and land on your feet.
Backwards.
No, it's not. You can do it when you're young, but you slowly. Anyway, so she goes down and she does say something immediately, but then she gets up to her feet and she starts walking around. And so, you know, after I knew that she was hurt, I was trying to find out where she got hurt because she did get right up after the moonsault. She's walking around and then she jumps up on the apron does some stuff in the ring, gets back on the apron. And so I'm thinking, did she get shoved off the apron and hurt herself or whatever? And what actually happened was she was just standing there and it just started hurting more and more. And at one point she sits down for a second and then she gets back up and then she sat down again and went to the floor and it was all over. And they were very concerned, obviously. They took her out of the match and Megan worked the match by herself. They obviously didn't want to beat her, so they did the lame DQ finish. But apparently it's a sprained ankle. So it was the best case scenario. No broken bones.
No torn ligaments.
And she should be back soon. I was told she should be back soon. Yeah. So that's great news.
Yeah, so they have Lina Cross attack with a belt for the DQ, which is horrible anyway, but she did it right as Megan cut Willow off. So there's no need to do this finish at that time. But it's a disaster. Crouch ain't bullshit, but what are you going to do? And, I must again point out, Lina Cross is huge, like way taller than Megan. I checked their feet. They're wearing similar heels. So she's a very, very large woman.
So someone here says the wrestling community bullied Harley Cameron off X. I did hear that she canceled her account. Are people blaming her for this injury? Because if they are, I say this to all of you on Twitter with all due respect. Fuck you. It is not Harley's fault. It is not Willow's fault. It is nobody's fault, because, again, that is not a moonsault that is designed to be caught. You can't catch somebody when they are doing the moonsault that way. It is designed for them to land on their feet and everybody else falls down. So any of you fuckers blaming anybody else for this, it's nobody's fault. You should not be doing moonsaults off the post and landing on your feet because you're going to get hurt. You know, I'm not blaming Penelope. Everybody does it, but it's just reality. But it is not Harley's fault. And it is not Willow's fault. And anybody blaming them can fuck right off.
Brody King versus Mark Davis. We had, of course, Fuck Ice Chance and also Fuck Don Callis, Fuck Ice 2.
Yes.
That was fun. They had a heavyweight war. And I'm watching these guys chop the piss out of each other and throw each other around and drop their entire body weight on each other. And what really stood out to me is how these two monsters were selling. This is not a case where each guy was going 100% until his life bar ran out or he just collapsed. This is not a case where a guy would be down hurt and then hit one move and pop up like everything was fine. This is a war of attrition. And both guys were suffering. Both guys were in pain. Both guys were out of breath. It was a war. And Mark came in with the hurt hand from punching the post against Mox a week or two back. So he throws a giant chop and sells his hand and screams. And then Brody tries a tope, and Mark blocks it with his brace or his cast or whatever, which works, but also hurts his hands. He's screaming more. And the longer it goes, the more they're showing how much this is taking a toll on them. But it takes more of a toll on Mark, apparently, because he goes for a sleeper, but Brody targets the hand to escape, grabs him, does a short-arm lariat, basically out of nowhere, and gets the win. It was a fight.
Yeah, this was the very definition of a mean guy match. It was a fucking brawl, and it was great. And Brody got the big win there. He also wants the title, and he has challenged Swerve to a match at Revolution, which Swerve was very happy to hear. Which I guess means they're presuming Kenny ain't going to be there. I guess he couldn't get out of his commitment.
Yeah.
So they've gotten Swerve a different match for that show.
Yeah. But it's because Swerve smirked. He didn't say anything, but we assume this is the match he wants. And it'll be Swerve versus Brody at the pay-per-view in kind of a de facto top contenders match, even though I'd call it that. But one would think whoever wins that would be next in line for whoever wins the main event. Bandido, by the way, also wants a fight at Revolution. So Andrade comes out. That's going to rule. Revolution sounds great. Renee is interviewing Kyle Fletcher. He references Tommaso Ciampa wanting Sylvie back of the TNT belt, but it's not Sylvie anymore. It's Pinky! He's got a pink leather strap for this belt. Okada interrupts, says the two of them have constantly been champions, unlike Takeshita. You are my best friend, he says. On Collision, we should team up as Proto Okada. And Fletcher agrees. So they have a tag match on Saturday.
I think that there's a very good chance Ciampa wins that belt back.
There seems that way.
Yeah.
They had the big win, which was awesome. And they did it so Kyle could walk into his hometown as champion, which was awesome. And they get feud for it. And Kyle won't hold that belt forever. There's bigger things on his plate. Mile High Madness. Jack Perry and the Young Bucks and the Rascals versus FTR and the Demand. So they basically had an Anarchy in the Arena match.
Yeah, they did.
Jack's coming out for his entrance. The heels jump him 5-on-1. His song keeps playing. The Bucks at the ring. The match begins. The song keeps playing. There's crazy shit happening everywhere. They got like 3 screens on the screen at one time trying to show everything, and just too much to follow. And eventually the song ends.
Yeah, you know what's the problem with the song ending? And actually they did play it again, and everyone popped huge.
That, I was going to say, the part where it ended, and everyone was kind of sad, and it played again, they all went crazy and started singing along.
But then they only let it play for 30 more seconds, and then it slowly just faded out.
Kind of, yeah.
You never heard it again.
They played it like 2 or 3 times.
So they've done the music thing at Anarchy in the Arena, and they'll usually play it. One time they played it like 4 times through. We were there live. And like every time they hit it again, the place went even more crazy. And I think finally like somebody destroyed a speaker or something to end the music or whatever. With Anarchy in the Arena, because it's like a main event feud, and it's supposed to be like it's like supposed to be a real bitter, angry war. There is a period during the match where the heels are going to get heat. And when that happens, you probably should turn the music off. But this was Mile High Madness, and there was a heel team, but there was no extended heat segment at all.
Not really.
It was just a party match from beginning to end. And I think if there's not going to be a prolonged heat segment, you honestly should just keep playing the music until the pinfall. Because this crowd would have went even more and more crazy every time. Because the music adds something to a kind of match like this. And, I mean, they just went 1,000 miles an hour. I mean, it was nonstop. It was just complete and total nonstop action. And I was like, it's a Mile High in Denver. And I was watching this match going, there's no way they can keep up this pace. They're at altitude. Like, you just can't. You've got to slow down at some point. And they kept going, and they kept going, and they kept going. And they were sprinting. And Blake here was in the audience, and he says the audience didn't sit down the entire thing. And they went for, I don't know, what, 17, 18 minutes? And, you know, they were still sprinting at the end of the match. And the match ended, and I was like in awe. Because, I mean, I've heard from wrestlers, you know, there have been MMA fighters. Anytime you are competing at elevation, everyone tells the same story. You just get so blown up. And I watched this match and I was like, how did these guys not get blown up? Some of these guys are big dudes, you know?
And they're flying.
And so I asked, you know, how was it? And the response was, everybody almost died. We were dying by the end of that match. But I guess nobody wanted to sell it. And so they just bowled on through, and sure as shit, they made it through and made it look like it was nothing, but it was not nothing.
I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. I was just in Colorado Springs last weekend, and I wasn't doing a wrestling match or any kind of sprint, really, but I was around doing stuff, and yes, it's real.
Oh, yeah.
You feel it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes the whole thing even crazier. So, it's just one or two guys in a big move or a big double team. They turn around, they get cut off. Somebody hits them with a big move or a big double team. Repeat, 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 repeat. There's no extended run of highlight anyone until after the break when Myron Reed, who was not even technically in the match, he runs out and looks like the biggest star of anyone. And he sprays a fire extinguisher in Toa Leona's face. He's running wild in the ring, running wild out of the ring. Finally, they catch him on a dive. They throw him into the announce desk. Jack Perry is out there digging under the ring for a weapon, and he keeps finding weapons but dismissing them. It's not the weapon he wants. And finally, he finds a vacuum cleaner, a big vacuum cleaner with a great big canister full of gunk and the crap that vacuum cleaners pick up. I have a vacuum cleaner very similar to this. It's not quite as big, but it has a canister like this. And when he glommed Toa Leona with this vacuum cleaner, and the contents of this canister went flying all over, really all over Colorado. It was in the ring and the floor. There's a big cloud. That was so disgusting. I hope everyone got their shots. Rascals and Bucks run wild as a 4-man unit for a while. They look fine. They hit a quintuple super kick. People start going through tables, and the crowd can see how many tables are still at ringside. So they chant 2 more tables, and then Toa Leona goes through one. 1 more table. And the FTR goes through one. Somewhere in this insanity, Dax tried to win the match with a schoolboy. I laughed. It was not to be. There's a parade of finishers. And finally, Ricochet is hit with, I don't know, a dozen moves. And the Bucks launch Jack into the air for a knee strike, I think. And he hit Ricochet and pinned him. So he's pinned Ricochet yet again. We'll probably get another title match when we think of Revolution. They were not lying. That was Mile High Madness.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I don't know what it, I still haven't figured out what's happening yet, because Jack and Ricochet have been feuding for a long time and they've had a lot of matches, and they're either going to wrestle again, at which point Jack Perry really has to win.
Yes.
Or like this was the end of the feud. Jack got his last big win and they're going to both move on to something else. So we'll probably know next week, but I did like this match. I mean, this was... I've seen a lot of really good TV matches coming out of Dynamite. This was probably the... I didn't see the Kenny Omega swerve match, and I didn't see the Mark Briscoe Kyle Fletcher match. So of the matches I have seen in 2026, this was the second best AEW match that I have seen. It was absolutely incredible.
You should watch Fletcher and Briscoe.
Excellent show. Yeah.
We also watched WWE NXT February 24th, 2026. I thought this was their strongest episode in a long time. Maybe it's just me.
Well, this was an excellent show. I shouldn't say an excellent show. I'll say this. By NXT standards, this was an excellent show.
Yeah.
By pro wrestling standards, is pretty good.
It was a...
There were some problems.
C+. Yes.
There were some problems.
By NXT standards.
But I don't want to give the whole speech again. As much as I enjoyed the show, when it was over... You know what's funny? There is no... I do these... I watch these shows, and then I do this show, and people think all these things about me. But honestly, like, when this show's over, I just move on with my life. I never dwell on wrestling. I'm never... Like, can't go to sleep at night because I'm thinking about wrestling or I'm mad about something. I'm like a normal person, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But there is one show that, like... I lay in bed at night sometimes, and I'm just like, I'm just kind of stewing a little bit. And it's this fucking NXT. And when this show was over, I really enjoyed it. But for like hours afterwards, I was just like low-key simmering. Because it's so obvious what's happening here, which is they're trying to fix all of these problems. They're trying to rehab the promotion. And none of this shit needed to happen if they wouldn't have had their head up their ass for all of 2025. They fucked everything up last year. They fucked up like five different talents. And then like four people got called up to the main roster and they were fucking sunk. And now they have to scramble and like change three titles in one night, put belts on some new young guys, like everything. I mean, listen, I thought it was really cool that Dark State lost the titles to the Vanity Project. But as I'm watching it, all I can think is, remember when Javon and Leon Slater couldn't beat Dark State for the tag team titles?
Yeah.
And then, like, everything I watched, I was just like, remember when Thea Hale accidentally won the title from Blake and the fucking place was so excited and she was so over? And all they could think about doing was take the title off her as fast as possible. Remember when Jada Parker was the most over woman on the roster and they still pushed her as a heel? And then when she wouldn't get booed, they just took her off television? You remember that? Remember when Lola Vice was at her fucking peak and her goddamn crazy father was in the front row watching her fight for the NXT women's title, and it was clearly time, and then they didn't do it? I just thought of all of these things as I'm watching these fuckers scramble to try to make some new stars, elevate some people. It's like, you know what? Good for you for doing it, but fuck you for making me sit through such a shitty fucking 2025, and now you're trying to make things right. I should have at least been sent like a thank you card or fucking something. God! Anyway, hopefully it's all uphill from here.
So it is Robert Stone this week. For a while there, he was just Stone, but he's Robert Stone now. He's in the crow's nest running down the card. Four title matches, a triple threat speed championship match. JC Jane versus Sol Ruka, Ethan Page versus Miles Bourne, and this tag team opener, Dark State versus Vanity Project for the tag team titles. This Dark State is Osiris Griffin and Saquon Sugars. And it starts with Osiris playing Giant, the Geeks bouncing off him repeatedly. In this match, for as long as it went until like the very end, Dark State were total babyfaces. To the point, had me thinking, I missed something last week, but apparently no, it's just because they had two heels and they just made Vanity Project the bigger heels. Osiris, by the way, if they want to start calling him the Egyptian Giant, they have my permission. That's a cool name.
Well, the guy's really good, and Saquon's really
good. Saquon is awesome. I'm happy he's getting it on TV.
When they're just wrestling, it's like, they're good.
Yeah.
When they don't do the stupid gimmick and all that other shit. And, you know, they were portrayed as the babyface team, which made it very weird because another babyface came out and screwed them to give the heel team the win because he's feuding with heels who are babyfaces here. Yep. It ain't perfect.
So the Vanity Project are a pretty good heel tag team. They know how to do tag teases and double teams and all that stuff. And they're trying to hold Sugars out of his corner. He just arches his back. He's very flexible and tags in that Egyptian Giant. They did a Doomsday Device dropkick that looked better than anything Megan Bain and Pele before ever did. No one died here. But Jackson Drake put the dude's foot on the rope on the outside. So security runs out and tackles Dark State. This lets Tony D'Angelo come in from the other side. He chokeslams Sugars on the apron. And the Vanity Project, pin him. They didn't hit their move. They didn't do a cradle. Tony D hit a chokeslam. They jumped on top and pinned him to win the tag titles. Big pop for that. So yes, Dark State are still heels. They're still feuding with Tony D. Now the match is pretty good.
I thought the match was I thought it was really good, actually. I am a fan of Vanity Project. You know, they got work to do, obviously. They just got signed. But I think they're a good heel team. They got a fun gimmick. And, you know, Saquon is actually quite great. Osiris has improved a lot. It was a good match. And I was very happy to see a title change.
Sarah Schreiber interviews Miles Bourne. She wants to talk about how he got a title shot last week, and he doesn't address that question or that issue at all. They showed it later in the show, but he completely ignored her question. He just talks about playing...
Well, he's deaf.
Maybe he didn't hear her. I thought about that. He talks about playing college football, getting a tryout here during COVID, and through it all, now he's going to be a new champion tonight. Keanu Carver versus Sean Legacy. They showed 3 weeks ago in the ladder match when Carver put Legacy through a wall. And they're doing this match. Carver's manhandling him in and out of the ring. Goes to put him through a wall again. But Legacy super kicks him, makes a comeback, gets a springboard 450 for two. But Carver cuts him off, gets a pounce, and a suplex body slam thing. Looks like something Bruiser Brody would do. Got the pin. It was fine.
It's hard to figure out how good Keanu Carver is because, first off, all he does is just murder people backstage. And then they put him in the ring with a guy who's really, really good. So I thought this match was pretty good for what it was, but I still don't know how good Keanu Carver actually is. But this was a good little match.
Ren and Kendall are trying to figure out if Zaruka are friends or not.
I hated this segment. I absolutely, completely hated this segment. I think this segment needs to be like studied for how not to do a segment in pro wrestling. Kendall and Ren, I mean, they said so many words in such a short period of time. I have no fucking idea what they were talking about because we didn't have a recap of what happened last week. They're just talking and talking and talking. And then Kalani shows up and challenges Ren. And then another person rushed in and a brawl broke out and the camera starts going like this. To this day, I don't know who this fourth person was. I don't know who it was. And they cut away, and I'm like, all right, I'm sure that old Vic is going to tell me, nope, not a word about this segment. They didn't explain, they didn't recap it, explain. I don't fucking know what happened. Lost. Who was it?
I'm pretty sure it was Lola Vice.
Okay, so you don't know either.
I was confident until you started talking about it. I'm like, God, fuck. Maybe I'm wrong.
God.
But Kalani was bragging about making Lola tap. And they never showed it. But I'm assuming she like whacked the handle.
Yeah,
the
what
hammer.
The fuck happened?
Yeah. So all these feuds must continue. Your speed championship match. Jasper Troy versus Elio LaFleur versus Eli Knight with a 7-minute time limit.
I don't know the guy's name, but some fucker on Twitter. Tom and I were ranting about how stupid this speed thing is, okay? And how stupid it is to have a 7-minute time limit for this match. And this guy on Twitter actually said, Brian proving he's never watched combat sports in his life. So the guy said. Now, first off, fucking combat sports. I'm a third-degree black belt in jiu-jitsu, so fuck off. And second off, I noticed that you mentioned me and not the other guy who said that this fucking 7-minute rule was stupid, that being former top 10 light heavyweight filthy Tom Lawler in the fucking UFC, which last I checked is also a combat fucking sport. This coward didn't even mention his name. But listen, this nerd clearly has never watched a combat sport in his fucking life, because in UFC, yes, a regular fight is 3 rounds, okay? Well, if you'd ever participated in a combat sport, Twitter nerd, you would know that 3 rounds is fucking hard, okay? Well, a championship match needs to be harder, hence it's 5 rounds, okay? Well, you idiot, and you idiots in NXT, the speed tournament is about having a high-speed match, and the challenge is the fact that it's 3 minutes, and you have to win in 3 minutes, okay? A championship match should be more challenging, right? Well, in a speed match, more challenging would be a shorter period of time, not a longer period of time. A longer period of time makes it easier. Hence, when they made this speed match a 7-minute match, they made it even easier to defeat the champion, because now, instead of having to defeat Jasper Troy in 3 minutes, you have 7 minutes to beat this fucking guy. So, the whole concept of the speed tournament, I like the speed tournament. It's like the Stardom high-speed matches, but a regular speed match should be 3 minutes, and if you want to make the championship match different, it should be 2 minutes. Or a regular match can be 4 minutes, and the championship match should be 3. But we do not need a three-way speed tournament match, nor does it make any sense that the fucking time limit is now 7 minutes. Now, with that said, I thought they did a hell of a job in this match.
They did.
Because the speed champion going into this match was Jasper Troy, who literally, after he won the title, did a promo saying, I'm not known for my speed. At which point I was like, fuck you all. He had slow, boring speed matches. Mm-hmm. He put on holds.
Yeah.
I was begging for this guy to lose the title. Nothing against the guy, but like, fuck.
He's not a speed champion.
So they announce a three-way, and it's like, okay, it's a three-way. Clearly, they're going to beat one of these other two men, so Jasper doesn't have to do a job. Well, amazingly, Jasper did, in fact, take the pin in this match to lose the title. And on top of that, even more astoundingly, in the middle of this speed match, you know what happened? A fucking speed match broke out.
They were going very quickly.
Because they threw this asshole... I apologize for that. In storyline, this asshole. They threw this slow guy out of the ring, and the two fast guys went really fast. So it was good. And then in the end, Jasper got pinned, and we have a new speed champion.
I like the finish because, yes, the simple story was, get the monster out of here. Neither of us can beat him. Maybe we can beat each other. So they would double team the monster, throw him out, turn on each other. The monster would resurface. They double team him. They turn on each other. And then the end, there's still like a whole minute to go. There's one like 6:08 or something. The monster's in the ring. Elio strikes with that head scissors driver similar to the one Hechicero uses. That takes Jasper Troy down. Eli follows with a moonsault, but he hits the moonsault and bounces up, and he's still going back up. It's not like he bounces up and landed. He's still gaining air as LaFleur dives in to cover Jasper. And so Eli Knight is essentially airborne as the count is going on. He can't break it up. Elio LaFleur pins Jasper Troy, kind of sort. Well, he did steal the pin, even though he hit the move first. But he is your new speed champion. And despite the added time, this went twice as long as your typical speed match. It still felt like a speed match. It felt way more like a speed match than a lot of what they've done lately.
Because a champion is slow.
Yes.
God.
Ricky Sainz talks to Ethan Page. They plug his guest appearance on Wild Cards on the CW. Ethan vows to defend his title against Miles Bourne tonight. Bad ankle or no bad ankle. And the Vanity Project blows through celebrating their championship win. NXT Chronicle, Joe Hendry.
God damn. This was the best thing on the show.
I can't believe they didn't air this until after he had won the world title, or the NXT title.
Bro, who gives a shit? At least they finally aired it.
Yeah.
There is one thing that NXT does better than anybody, and that is personality profiles and getting people over. And this fucking... it was funny, because they did they did the first part, and I thought, I cannot wait till next week's show to see part two. And then like 15 minutes later, they just aired part two.
It wasn't even like an hour later. It was very quickly.
It was very weird.
Yeah.
But this guy's story is actually incredible.
It really is.
And it's all true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you always hear about self-made man and all that kind of shit. And no one is really a self-made man. You know, everybody has help and everything like that. But, I mean, this guy, he's a self-made man. He made himself a superstar. And he is where he is today because of his own fucking really hard work. And brains.
Creativity.
And creativity. Right place, right time.
Sure, a lot of luck.
Capitalizing
Absolutely.
On things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, taking chances to try to better himself. I mean, I was so proud of this guy when it was over.
So that's true. Like,
God damn, this what a great story this guy has.
So it's also funny because you know, the story is true. And so TNA last year when he won their title, basically like the exact same video package. This is just like an updated version of that. But he went to university. As they say in the United Kingdom, went to University of Scotland, got a master's degree in business and marketing, had a black belt in judo. He was touring as a professional musician. So he's like, you know what? I'm 24 years old. I'm going to get into professional wrestling. So he did that for a while. To be a better pro wrestler in his mid-20s, he started amateur wrestling. He did have a judo background, so it wasn't totally foreign to him, but he still won two British championships.
Good for him.
Yeah, it's incredible. Then the creativity comes up. He's basically pro wrestling's Weird Al Yankovic. He started making musical parodies for his opponents, and this got him over. Got to wrestle Cody Rhodes, Kurt Angle, Drew McIntyre. He's doing streaming. He's doing podcasting. Anything he can to get his name out there and get noticed. It all starts to work, and then the world shuts down. COVID strikes. He does whatever he can to get through there. Spends his very last dime to pay for a visa to come to the U.S. to work for TNA. And that's where the part one ends. Best thing in NXT in weeks. Many
weeks. WWE always has these weird words that they have to say.
Yeah.
The world shuts down is one of them. Yeah, yeah. They never mention COVID. They always, everyone has to say that.
That is true.
The world shut down.
Yeah. And then we got another one. NXT Origins, Damian Priest. And they show him showing up in NXT as Punishment Martinez. He had a...
Damage control videos. I'm already sick of these. It pisses me off every time I see one.
He had a lot of experience, but knew he had to start over in this new promotion. Talks about everything he learned at NXT, how he went on to be world champion. I thought this was a great idea. They should keep doing these. There's a lot of guys.
I'm sick of seeing them.
On the main roster who came through NXT.
If this would have been done 2 years ago, fine. 3 years ago, whatever. But like, it just comes across as, yes, we had the shittiest year of all time. We won worst show. Like, you know how long NXT's been around?
At least a decade.
This is the first time they ever won worst television show in the entire existence of this company. And now we have to watch these fucking videos of these guys talking about how great it was in NXT. And all I can think is, yeah, it used to be great. I can't, like, the day's going to come when they do one of these with Javon, and that's, I'm just going to quit. That's when I'm going to quit this fucking show. I'm done.
I haven't even thought about that. Dark State is raging backstage. Lola storms through, shuts all four of them down. So she can storm into Stone's office. She wants an underground match with Kalani Jordan. Stone agrees.
No, Stone didn't agree. He goes, you really want that? I was like, she's a former Bellator fighter, and Kalani's a gymnast.
Yeah.
What do you mean, do you really want that? Of course she does.
Well, they booked it. It's happening at Vengeance Day.
Poor Robert Stone has the Ava role. Make goofy decisions, say dumb things. What a life.
Sol Ruka versus JC Jane.
I couldn't help but notice that Ava has been tweeting about horses on social media.
Okay.
I think she was following my adventures in Mexico.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
She said, horse riding sounds like fun. Yeah. So Zaruka comes out. They're all buddy-buddy, smiling, happy, friendly. Dude, and they finally broke up.
Vinny, they did, but like, Zarya Spears' soul.
Yeah, but during the intros.
During the intros, gives her an F5, and I'm still bitter about Booker winning Worst Announcer. Vic Joseph is baffled.
Well, yes.
He's fucking baffled. I can't believe what I'm seeing. I was like, what have you been doing for the last 9 fucking months, dude? You're surprised that they broke up? What the fuck are you talking about? So she beats her ass, throws her in the ring. JC hits the spitting form and pins her.
Bear to elbow her right in the head.
Yep.
It was really loud.
Yep. And then Zarya takes Sol outside afterwards, gives her the F5 on the table. These fucking fans are chanting for Zarya.
Yes.
And like, I swear to God, after all these months, this whole segment is like 3 minutes long, and it's to the back. And they just go to the back.
Like commercial, I think, but yes. Point stands.
Whatever, they go to commercial.
And they
come back, and they do not go back to this.
No.
They come back to do a Tatum Paxley thing, and then they do another thing. And I'm like, you strung me along for 9 fucking months, and you finally pulled the trigger on this fucking turn, and then just cut away, and it was a half hour before you did a follow-up? Fuck! And then, you know, there's another thing. I could speak for hours tonight. You know, Vince was in charge, and like every week he just did some stupid shit, and he'd change this and change that, and like there was no such thing as long-term storytelling, and all these fans got sad that long-term storytelling was dead. And then, you know, Tony starts AEW, and he's Mr. All my storylines are going to go 6 years. And then Triple H takes over, and he starts doing these long-ass storylines. And now we've gone, like, the complete opposite direction. You know? It used to be there was no such thing as long-term booking. Now we have to go the complete opposite, where the long-term booking, everything takes fucking forever. And so what happens is these guys have been teasing a breakup for so fucking long that when Zarya finally turns on Sol, the place goes wild. And she's like a babyface.
Yeah.
Because they've been waiting forever, and she's the one that did it. And so now she's like a hero to these people. So next week they've announced that Sol Ruka is going to be facing JC Jane for the title.
Zarya.
What did I say?
You said Sol Ruka.
No, Sol Ruka. Yeah, yeah, Zarya. Yeah. But the point is, Sol Ruka, you know, is going to interfere.
Seems likely.
And so I think they think Sol's going to run out and cost her the match and everybody's going to cheer. These fuckers are going to turn on Sol hard. We're not to the same level, but this is like Becky Lynch in 2017 when these fucking morons didn't know what was going on and couldn't figure out why she was getting cheered and she was supposed to be getting booed. Same fucking thing's going to happen with Zarya. And part of the reason is it takes so fucking long to do everything. Plus, if you've really been watching the story, it's like Zarya is getting fucked 6 ways from Sunday. Like, she gets no opportunity. Sol gets all the opportunities. And so, you know, they'll probably end up having to turn Sol heel, and then they'll claim it was by design, even though it's clearly not. But anyway, fuck.
So Tatum Paxley is doing this promo, and it starts with a very close zoom in on her face. It zooms out and zooms out, and you realize she's actually in the crowd cutting this promo. And how they kept everyone from, because I didn't see security surrounding her. She's just in the crowd. And how they kept everyone just from like running in front of the camera and waving, I don't know. But she's talking about trying to find love and craving acceptance. So she's, I compare her to Hangman Page, but really that's most wrestlers in 2026. And she thanks the crowd for accepting her as she is and showing real love. When she beats Izzy Dame at Vengeance Day, that North American title won't be mine. It will be ours. Everyone cheers. Old school. This is classic babyface stuff. She wants one last conversation with Izzy Dame, who shows up on the other end of the bleachers, and she starts to approach Tatum, and the fans, actually, to me, the fans are all just security in disguise. They step in to separate them, then the lights go out, and we don't see them anymore. I thought both of them were great here while it lasted. So it's Blake Monroe versus Thea Hale in a speed tournament rematch. It has a rematch from the time Thea beat her on accident. And is this her first match since then? Or did Blake get her win back? I forget.
Blake never got her win back.
All right, she's coming here to get her win back. They go a minute. Jada Parker runs in, lays out Blake with a hip attack, and throws her in, and Thea wins. Yep. Okay.
Doing great.
Doing great. Jada let her hair down here, and she looked like...
This made me mad, by the way.
Yeah.
And not having anything to do with Blake, but it's more now Thea's getting an opportunity.
Sure. When she's not over.
Fuck.
They could have pushed her when she was over, but now she's not over.
She fucking won that title on accident. And I said the day it happened, they're going to get this belt off her as fast as they can.
Yep.
I was absolutely right.
Yep.
And then here we are. Now, goddamn, let's put her over Blake in this speed tournament match. And now we're going to have Jada Parker and Blake, which, God bless Blake. I don't know, man. If she wins this feud, I'm just going to lose it, man. Jada is a better promo, a better worker. She's more over. I mean, she's far more ready to get called up right now than Blake. I can't tell if they're blind or not yet. Good chance.
There's many signs of blindness.
We'll see.
Hmm. Jada let her hair down here and looks like, of all people, Ava.
Yeah.
So we had brackets for the speed tournament. There's... four people in it, and Thea just wants another three people in it. So it'll be Thea Hale versus the winner of Ren Sinclair and Nikita Lyons. And the winner of that will challenge, I believe, Fallon Henley.
Nikita Lyons is apparently back.
She's been back.
She just like comes and goes.
Yeah, it's weird. They never make a big deal out of it. She's just back sometimes. The Joe Hendry Chronicle is continued. In TNA, he fought Nick Nemeth, he fought Moose, he fought Josh Alexander. They didn't name these people, but they showed him. His theme song started to blow up and went viral. He started pushing it. It went to number one in the UK. He debuted in NXT, got a bunch of online views, won the TNA title, appeared in the Royal Rumble, appeared at WrestleMania. They show AJ Styles putting him over. They show John Cena shaking his hand or whatever. And then the best part is they air a promo by Joe Hendry from a tryout he had in 2013 about how he's coming to the Performance Center and you better keep an eye on him. And he... won the NXT title. He's proved he's more than just a song and a smile. This whole thing was just incredibly great. Tremendous stuff.
Loved it.
Kale Dixon versus Uriah Connors. Neither guy gets an entrance, but they get in there, and Connors has, apparently officially known as the Birthright, is in his corner. It's Lexus King and Stax and Ariana. And Kale has Mr. Chase, who, yes, is still there. And instantly, and I mean instantly, they looked better as opponents than they ever did as partners. This was a speed match, really. It was awesome while it lasted.
I was not as sold on it as you.
All right.
I mean, listen, like, I think these guys are actually pretty good workers, I would say. But this was like one of those matches they do with the women where it was just like, it was so choreographed. And they were just going like 1,000 miles an hour.
Yes.
And like nothing sunk in. I mean, I know people are going to say, oh, it's not the mile high. No, it isn't the mile high match. Like, the mile high match had a million moves, but, like, every big move, there would be a beat afterwards for it to sink in. And there was none of that in this match. It was just big move, big move, big move, big move, da-da-da-da-da, and then it was over. Felt like it was like a two-minute match with 10 minutes of moves in it.
Something like that. That's all fair, but I will say we see
they did it well.
We see a lot of matches like this in NXT that aren't this good.
Yeah, it was. I mean, for what it was, and it was good.
But. For these guys, we were talking about Dixon has looked good lately, but I thought this was the best Uriah Connors has ever looked. I had low expectations for this and exceeded them. So Uriah has a stunner for two, but he stops to smile at Mr. Chase, which lets Dixon recover and make his comeback. He gets a Fosbury flop, gets a corkscrew splash. He tries a moonsault, but Connors gets the knees up and follows with a flying knee to the head for the win. I wrote for two, but he pinned him. That was shockingly great, I thought. Zarya confronts Fatal Influence. She says, you owe me, because she's like a soul and they got an easy win. JC denies this. The bell rang. I hit my finish. I pinned her. I don't owe you anything. She's got a strong point there. So Zarya says, you give me a title match next week, or I'll do to you what I did to Soul. So she's saying, if you won't give me a fight next week, then I'll beat your fight ass. You.
Yes.
So if you got a fighter either way, may as well make it a non-title fight. I thought that was an empty threat, but apparently it worked. Vanity Project and Ricky Starks were all over the show. They're putting each other over, burying that...
Ricky Saint!
I did say Ricky Starks.
Yes.
Old habits. Old man. Buries the biography of Joe Hendry, says, I can do anything better than him. He likes to do his concerts. I will do the absolute Ricky Saint experience next week.
What's that going
to
be?
That's a good question. I don't think it's going to be a concert. But he goes to practice, he says. And the others are talking about helping Ethan Page retain his title, but Hank and Tank and Shiloh Hill show up, and they've got the steering wheel from Brad Baylor's car, and six of them all have a fight. And Ethan Page, Miles Bourne video package. You see Ethan facing guys from all over the world, mocking Miles' disability, trying to get Miles to cheat. Miles loses and attacks him, and they show how he got his title shot, which was he threatens to pilmanize Ethan's ankle if Ethan won't give him a title match. Ethan says, okay. And Miles turns and backs away. Ethan mocks him. I knew you couldn't do it. And so Miles does it. Well, at least he wasn't just handed to him after he lost a match. He tortured the champion and got a match that way. But there's a reason for it then.
There was, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, when I heard about that angle, I was like, okay, Ethan's probably losing the title and bad ankle, you know, it'll play into... It didn't play into this match one bit.
No, he was fine.
Not one bit. I mean, I totally forgot about it until you mentioned it. But now that you mention it, he didn't limp.
No.
The ankle didn't play into the finish.
It was an excuse to do a promo in the trainer's room earlier. But they put up extra tape on there. He's good to go.
He beat this guy's ass for like minutes on end. Through the break, kept beating his ass. Mm-hmm. Beat him. And never sold the ankle, not for one second, I don't think, in this match.
No. So I guess we're there. We're just finished it. The main event is Ethan Page versus Miles Bourne. And as you know, they had a banger. They went...
It's because Ethan Page is awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. What the hell's that guy doing here other than trying to help these guys learn to work?
Yep.
Which is why he's here, for being honest.
So he's hitting all his big moves. Gets an Ego's Edge for two, a Superplex for two. Vanity Project attacks. And Drake hits a belt shot. Miles still kicks out of that. Hank and Tank and Shiloh attack the Vanity Project. Ricky Saints tries to interfere, but Joe Hendry is there to take care of him. And Miles escapes an Ego's Edge, escapes a twisted grin. He shoves Ethan into a turnbuckle, which none of the announcers or me, frankly, realized it had been an exposed buckle until they watched the replay. But he shoves Miles into that, hits the Bourne again, which is a zigzag, gets the win. It was a red-hot finish.
Yeah, we 3-in-1 show, you know? This felt like it was Miles' turn. Not like he was the best guy for the job.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, you know, there have been a lot of moments where, you know, Javon should have won the Iron Survivor, like, in 2024, and he probably should have beat Obafemi for the title at Mania. That was the time, you know? And Lola Vice should have won the title from JC Jane on that show when her dad was there. Like, it was time. You know, there have been certain people where, all right, it's time to pull the trigger on this person. You know, it was an accident with Thea, but, like, it worked. It was time. This felt like, it's not time, but, like, this is the guy we chose. I would have actually had Ilya LaFleur beat Ethan Page in his debut. That's what I thought they should have done. The idea is to, like, make new stars and everything like that. But I'm fine with it, you know. It's good to have another new face with a belt. But, yeah. I think the lesson to be learned from NXT in 2025 is that, you know, MMA is real. You have no control over finishes. Pro wrestling is fake. You have control over the finishes and the booking. But that doesn't mean that you need to book a long storyline and then stick to it come hell or high water. The fact that it's fake means you can be flexible. So I'll bet you anything that they're plan was that Javon was going to win the title at Stand and Deliver over Mania weekend, which actually right now isn't even over Mania weekend. It's 2 weeks before in a 2,000-seat building, which is sad. But, you know, they thought they could drag it out, and he does one show on Saturday night's main event, and he's called up. So much for the plan. So sometimes you got to shift. Sometimes when a guy gets over or a woman gets over, you got to go with it. And they stuck to their guns too hard, and almost made it like real. They're just, it's like they had no control over what they were doing. Yeah. Oh shit, she's over? Fuck. Well, we don't plan to have her win until 2029. Well, you can have her win now because it's fucking fake. But anyway, this was a better show.
It was a much better show. For the sake of completeness, I do want to say right before the main event, there was a segment in Mr. Stone's office there where he's running down the card for next week. Izzy Dame storms in, says, I want Tatum Paxley in a face-to-face next week. And he says, we're talking about Tatum Paxley. And she says, exactly. And I have no idea what the hell either of them meant by any of this, but I guess it's going to happen.
All right, everybody. Well, we're going to wrap it up. If you enjoyed the show, you should sign up. WrestlingObserver.com, F4WOnline.com/YouTube, F4WOnline.com/Spotify, F4WOnline.com/Apple. Any of those. This coming Saturday, we're going to be back. Multiple shows on Saturday for Elimination Chamber. Vinny and I are going to watch the show live and go immediately afterwards. And then later on in the evening, Dave Meltzer and I will do a recap and talk all of the weekend news. And then we'll be back on Monday for everything else as well. So lots of stuff. Landstorm and Filthy Tom tomorrow are going to be talking about all sorts of things on Observer Live. I will be gone, but they're going to run the show, including a lot of talk about dives and catching dives as a result of what happened with Penelope. So that's coming up tomorrow. And that's it, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Bye.